Hey Shane, can you hear this?
I feel like you're breaking your microphone.
That's the Islanders' heartbeat the last six games.
And with that, we are back here on the Secondary Assist Podcast after a two-week break, Christmas and New Year's. I hope everybody enjoyed their holiday, enjoyed their time off from work, school, whatever you were off from. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it far more than we all have enjoyed the Islanders play. But with the slow heartbeat, with the awful December, and with that ridiculous losing streak they were just on, the Islanders are still just a point out of the second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Andy, how are you?
I'm well, Shane. Happy New Year to you and your family and to everyone out there listening. I echo Shane's sentiments. Happy holidays and hope you had a good New Year. And I just returned back to work last week after 14 days off, and it absolutely, positively, I can confirm that it sucks. Indeed, sucks hard. And but trying to get back in the flow. It's a new year, and we'll see what happens. But when it comes to this team, you know, it's the same problems that we saw kind of rearing their ugly head, Shane. We talked about it. You and I have been beating this drum since probably we started doing our summer editions back in August, that we weren't really comfortable with the way the defense looked. I'll be honest, I didn't think they would be this bad. I had my concerns, but, you know, in the last six games in which they've gone 1-5, the numbers are just, I mean, astoundingly awful. I mean, a 4.77 goals against average, an 879 save percentage, 39.8 shots against per game. It's just been ugly on the defensive side of the puck. And I'll be completely dead honest with everybody, I don't know what the fix is at this point.
Well, I could nail the problem right here. The Islanders are third in the league in goals per game for, and second in the league in total goals for, and are still a minus 12 goal differential.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed
Astonished.
To...
It's crazy bad.
The Lightning, who are the team with the most goals for the season, their goal differential is plus 52.
Yep.
So the Islanders' offense is there. For what seems like the first time in years, it's not that the Islanders can't score. It's almost like the Islanders could score at will. They're losing games 6-5, 7-6. Like it's almost like I'm watching high school hockey when it comes down to it. They have 146 goals for, 158 goals against, good for a minus 12 differential. You're not going to win games, and you're not going to make the playoffs. You're not going to make the playoffs if your goal differential is minus 12. Pittsburgh's goal differential is also minus 12. That's because their goaltending situation is not... apparently, Matt Murray is not who everyone thought he was going to be, taking over for Marc-Andre Fleury. But the Islanders have to figure out what they can do defensively. And, Andy, I'm with you. I'm no longer in a boat where I can say, okay, well, you sit Seidenberg and you play Pulock more minutes.
Right.
It doesn't matter who plays. Nobody is doing anything defensively. You have the second
really
and third
doesn't.
Best defensemen on the team hurt. I'll give them that. But even when Dahan and Boychuk were in the lineup, there was no difference.
Well, they weren't struggling this bad, but they were still struggling, yes. They were at like, you know, they were giving up maybe 3.5 goals per game.
Lately,
it's been, you know, if you round up the 4.77, it's 5 goals a game, and that's just... That's not even bad. That's pathetic. It's pathetic in the NHL it's fundamentals, man. It's fundamental defensive hockey that they're not playing. Cal Clutterbuck talked to him the other night after the 4-0 loss to Pittsburgh, and he flat out just told us that it's unprofessional mistakes, he said. It's mistakes that professional hockey players at this level should not be making. He said, good NHL teams make them every now and then. We're making them often. And then he looks at us and says, there's really nothing else I could say. That's how Cal put it. And look, he's been just as culpable as everybody else. You can't really single any one guy out of this defensive atrocity that we've seen this year. And that includes John Tavares. He's never been known as a good defensive player anyway, and he's certainly been carrying the bacon offensively. He's still the Islanders' most marketable, complete, and best player.
That's funny, because I was going to say, I think this has been the best year for DeFaris defensively. Yes, the team is struggling,
I think
as an individual player, I think this has been Tavares' best defensive year, or at least it's the year I've noticed him the most in the defensive zone.
Well, noticing him standing around in the defensive zone is different than noticing him making a difference in the defensive zone.
He still has his Alex Ovechkin controller disconnected moments, which is still the greatest GIF, whatever the hell you want to call it, of all time. I don't know if you've ever seen it or if you remember it, but it was the Ovechkin just kind of cruising into the defensive zone, and then someone overlaid.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Tavares does do that. He has his controller disconnected moments, but on a whole, individually, I think it's one of his better defensive seasons. I've noticed him grabbing guys backdoor, lifting sticks. I've noticed him backchecking. I've noticed him making defensive plays. It's just not enough because the rest of the team is so far behind.
That leads us to kind of the next probably valid discussion point, and that is we've been having people really overreacted to something that I had said on Twitter just last week.
No.
Can you believe it? I couldn't believe it. I was so taken aback. I lost more of my hair. That's how taken aback I was. It just fell out. But I had said something about Tavares' captaincy and the fact that he is the leader. That C on his jersey makes him the leader of this club on and off the ice. And that nobody, including him, should be exempt from any warranted criticism during this horrific defensive streak and prior to the 5-4 shootout win over the Devils, 5-game losing streak, all in regulation, where Metro teams were just collecting points. All Metro teams were collecting points except for us, it seemed. That's all I said, was that, you know, everyone puts him on this pedestal and anoints him this god. And to the Islanders organization, he somewhat is. I'm not going to say, you know, he is. But does that make him, especially as the captain, exempt from any criticism, whether it's warranted or not? I don't think so. I think that's egregiously wrong to just omit him from. I think that the role of an NHL captain in his case anyway is being severely glossed over and underestimated, in my opinion.
Well, for me, and I have this argument with people in all the major sports, your captain isn't always your best player, and quite frankly, a
Correct.
Lot of the time shouldn't
yep.
be. A lot of the times,
very valid.
A lot of the times your best player is by far not your leader.
Very valid.
I mean, you have the rare case where a guy like Taves is, over the course of those years, was probably the best all-around forward on Chicago and the captain. But that's rare for me. Unless you have a guy like McDavid or Crosby, who if you don't make them the captain, you're just going to get berated by reporters until you do. Your captain doesn't have to be, and in my opinion, I'll say it again, shouldn't be your best player. Your captain should be the guy who, when you're going through a 5-game losing streak, before Doug Wade even gets in the locker room, he's in there throwing stuff.
Exactly.
He's in your face.
That was my point. And people were totally glossing that over with Tavares. Look, we know Tavares, his own teammates have told us that he's not the vocal type. He's a lead by example guy. Quote, I'm doing air quotes as I say that. That's BS, man. That's crap to me. When your team is defensively missing assignments, and as Cal Clutterbuck said, making unprofessional mistakes, just literally AHL-type rookie mental mistakes that they shouldn't be making at this point, that's where you need someone to really step up and get in their grill, break a stick, throw some shit around the locker room. Apparently, he doesn't do any of that. He doesn't say pretty much, from what we've gotten, anything. And that's what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about the worth of John Tavares to the Islanders organization, which is through the moon. He's worth more to the Islanders organization than arguably any other player to any other team in the NHL. I get that. And he deserves his status for all the crap he's put up with the last decade. I get that. I'm fully on board with that argument. Believe me, I am. And he's the least of the Islanders' problems this year. I'll put that out there, too. Fully on board with that. I know that. I'm not, you know, saying that. But, again, you know, words get twisted, context gets lost. My argument against him is purely in the leadership role. It's purely in a leadership role. Then some people are saying, well, should he make third line guys like Allen Quine and Shane Prince better? That's not what I'm saying. Yes, a player of Tavares's caliber, like a Sidney Crosby or a Connor McDavid, makes guys that play with him better. I get that. But no, of course not. You can't just inject, you can't just as captain inject talent into somebody that just doesn't have it.
No, but you need to be able to hold guys accountable. And you need,
right.
People need to be, there needs to be someone to answer to when you miss an obvious assignment or when you,
right.
And quite frankly, and I will still defend him because I think Doug Wade has done a tremendous job and I think his numbers overall since he took over speak for themselves. This is the first real adversity, the first real large group of poor play we've seen since Doug Wade took over as the head coach of the Islanders. But if Doug Wade is failing at holding players accountable, that's where your captains, and it doesn't just have to be the C, that's where your group of captains, the guy, the coaching staff, the front office chose to lead this team, need to step in and need to say, hey, we're going to hold you accountable. You need to answer to us. You need to answer to the other 18 guys in this locker room, 19 guys in this locker room, if you're going to miss wide open assignments, if there's going to be people wide open in the defensive zone walking in, and we can blame the goalies all we want. When they're facing this many high-quality chances, they're mm-hmm. not going to make stops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, it seems like our goalies don't make the necessary stops.
No,
they let up very untimely goals. They let up backbreaker goals. They do.
Yep.
But you can only ask them to do so much when you're miserable defensively.
And allowing 40 shots a night.
Exactly.
That's all I was saying, and it got totally taken out of context. It got blown into this huge freaking thing where, oh my God, it was ridiculously immature and amateur hour, honestly, from some, I'm not going to mention names, but they know who they are. But at the end of the day, that's all I was saying, was basically I was questioning Tavares's leadership, not his ability, not his worth to the organization. I was purely not even questioning it. I was speaking about him in that context, let me say. And it got totally blown. I don't feel that just because he is who he is and he means so much to this organization that he should be exempt from me being able to talk about that when it comes to him. It's a ridiculous notion that you can't even mention his name in any negative context whatsoever. It's just a ridiculous notion to me. Look, you've heard the stories of going back to the 94 Rangers, that players in that locker room were literally scared of Mark Messier. Like when he looked at them, they were mentally intimidated. That's why the Rangers in 94 weren't the best team in the league. If you look up and down their roster, they won the Stanley Cup because of him. Plain and simple. Jonathan Toews has been dubbed Captain Serious, right? Again, it's that aura that he creates around him. Sidney Crosby, same thing. Go back, we'll switch sports and look at Michael Jordan, who was said to be probably one of the most ferocious practice players that anyone's ever seen. Like they said, he would rip guys a new one in practice if they weren't practicing hard enough. That's I think what the Islanders at this point could use, in my opinion.
And I've never been in the locker room, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the person on the outside that I see as their biggest leader is no longer in the lineup right now. He's hurt. Yes, he's still around the team, but he's not participating.
Who, Boychuk?
Yeah, for me, when I look at the team, I see two people who stand out.
Johnny,
to me.
Though, he's kind of light, though. He's kind of more on the, like, keeps the team loosey-goosey. Like, he's a funny guy. He cracks a lot of jokes. He's a fun guy to be around. I'm not sure how serious he is in terms of that.
So, and this is perfect. Since
in terms
you,
of what we're discussing.
Since you have, you're inside there. You know the guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking from the outside in.
Yep.
If I had to pick the people I would be afraid in the locker room of them coming down on me as my captain, it would be Clutterbuck.
Yep.
It would be Boychuk. And for me, it would be Casey. Because I think Cizikas has that edge to him that...
Oh, he does. So, I'll tell you, the night... When the hell was it? It wasn't the 4-0 game. It was a couple of games prior to that when they were continuing to bleed goals. And he was kind of just sitting there staring into space and... I said to the PR guy, I said, you know, is Casey available? And he says, yeah, go ahead. You know, so I went over and I started talking to him. And It was almost like that Colin McDonald story that I tell from a couple of years ago when they were so bad, where, you know, if looks could kill, I'm already dead. I was dead walking over there if looks can kill. Yeah, he's very, very intense and doesn't take losing well at all. So I agree with you on Clutterbuck. I agree with you on Cizikas. Boychuk, I think, is a little too loosey-goosey for me in that role, I think. Look, we talked about this in the media room prior to Friday night's game with a couple of my colleagues. The Islanders lost a lot of identity. Whether you want to admit it or not, whether you want to throw at me this bullcrap Corsi advanced possession stuff and all that BS, the Islanders lost a lot of identity when Matt Martin left. And they lost a lot of toughness when Matt Martin left. They are a very soft team to play against right now. And there's no two bones about it. I can't sugarcoat that. We can't hide that anymore. They are a very soft team to play against.
And there's no one in the pipeline who's going to change that.
There's not. And that fourth line was, people have to remember those last 2 years at the Coliseum when that fourth line would come on the ice with the Islanders needing an emotional lift. And man, they would get that place absolutely buzzing. They would actually be a feeling in the rink, a literal buzz that you felt, a jolt of energy when they just came out and started banging people around. And he's not the greatest hockey player, I know that, not even close. But I think people undersell, again, the chemistry aspect. And at
this point, who really in the lineup is giving you anything that he wouldn't have anyway? It's been a revolving door.
That's
it's been a revolving door on the fourth line.
He's better than the bottom four. I think if you take out Cal and Casey from the bottom six, he's better than the other four.
I'd rather have Even Martin Brock than Chimera. Right now, I'd rather have Martin than Nelson.
Right.
Yes, Nelson scored that winner in the shootout, which, by the way, was a god-awful shot and should never have got in on Corey Schneider.
He practically fanned on it.
But he hasn't done and I see the arguments on Twitter. Why is Brock Nelson still in the lineup? And yes, I still find it difficult to remove a potential 20-goal scorer. Not potential, a perennial 20-goal scorer from the lineup. But, my God, at what point do you remove the sieve from the lineup? He's atrocious. He hasn't done anything on either side of the ice. At least if he was contributing offensively, you could say, all right, I can live with the lax defensive play.
Right.
But he's not doing anything.
So what we talked about in the media room was in the light of this being Chimera's last, three or four months with the club, is calling up Toronto and saying, we'll throw you a fourth round pick for Martin. Or how about this? We'll send you a third round pick. You eat $1 million.
And we'll take Martin back.
So he's only costing the Islanders $1.5 million. You know Martin would run back here. He'd be on the next fucking plane.
Is this the kind of front office you think would admit to a mistake like that and make the trade for him?
At this point, I do. I think that Gart Snow he's got to be held accountable for the last decade of mistakes that have been made. I think the three goalie ridiculousness last year that cost the Islanders a playoff spot. That's all on him. And I think that the trade for Jordan Eberle was fantastic. He won that clearly. But the trade for Travis Hamonic, as much as Travis Hamonic had a down year, and we know that trade now was made for personal reasons and not hockey reasons, it's a trade that he did for Travis, which was a great thing that he did. But on the flip side of that, he's still sitting with the two high picks that he got. And this team has holes all over their defense. Why? So, because once again, they counted on youngsters to step up. Ryan Pulock, Adam Pellick, Scott Mayfield. They counted on half of their defense being rookies and just not being able to weather the storm of those rookie mistakes that they're making.
So I have three thoughts on trading for Matt Martin. Two negative, one positive.
Uh-oh.
Which ones do you want first?
The negative, please.
All right, so the first negative is ridiculous, and you could yell at me if you want, but God, I do not want to deal with Twitter if the first trade...
That's the stupidest negative I've ever heard. That's the stupidest argument against trading form
yourself.
I've ever heard.
If Gart Snow if the first trade right now Gart Snow makes is for Matt Martin, Twitter will explode, and I could not deal with it. I can't.
I think that you're wrong. I think that you'll find that it's going to be a 75-25 split.
See, I don't think so. I don't think so, and my second negative is the reason why.
Go ahead.
I love Matt Martin. I think you're 100% right that he'll help bring that kind of physical and tough identity back to the Islanders. I think he could up the chemistry. He does absolutely nothing for the defensive problems that are plaguing the Islanders.
He doesn't, and I never said he did.
Right, but what I'm saying is right now, my first focus is less on the chemistry
but
and
you're
the
not,
identity.
You can't fix that via trade. All these people out there screaming for a PS4 trade, you cannot fix what ails the Islanders with one guy. And you're not getting a top four D-man anyway. Why? Because it's January. Teams aren't trading them. And if they are trading them, they're going to look at the Islanders situation and say, I got Garth over a barrel. So if it normally would cost X, I'm going to ask Garth for X plus X.
Right.
Because he's so desperate.
Plus,
use your heads. Use your heads.
The trade deadline is too far away.
Exactly. Teams don't know where they're going to be in a month.
Right.
Use your heads, people. Come on.
But
I get screaming for a deal. I get it.
And I'm not even screaming.
I think they need something, but use your heads.
I'm not even screaming for a deal. I'm just saying I don't necessarily know if the top priority in my mind is bringing back Matt Martin for.
But it might be the easiest thing you could do now to try to change something. Right?
Sorry, I'm reading Staples' tweet.
It might be the easiest thing to do to change something.
Yeah, I see it from that aspect. Trust me, I totally understand the chemistry aspect. I said when they didn't re-sign him that we were going to feel it more than we thought. I absolutely said that. I absolutely believe that. Something needs to be done defensively. I know we're not going to make a ridiculous trade. Oliver Ekman-Larsson is not walking through the door. He's not going to be here tomorrow.
Neither is Erik Karlsson.
No, these trades aren't going to happen.
Nope.
So now it's on the front office and Doug Waite to sit down and figure out what you can do.
Devin Toews is out for the year now, so he's not an option. So all you have is what you see.
So now let me
and
ask
what
you.
What you see is that Ryan Pulock still has a lot to learn. Sebastian Aho, for as impressive as he's been, is going to have a lot to learn. And Scott Mayfield has a lot to learn. Adam Pellick has a lot to learn. What the hell's the common denominator there? They all have a lot to learn. And I don't mind that. That's called development. But it's something the Islanders can't afford right now, especially in a Tavares contract year.
So Staple just tweeted about Franzen, who's on waivers.
Yeah, I saw that.
Not sure if it makes it to them in order. I'm confused about how Pittsburgh is ahead of the Islanders in.
I don't even want to go into that. The waiver order.
So. Oh, because they played more games? Is that why? Oh, no, they have a point more. So how they have a point more. So how are they ahead of us in the waiver order? This crap doesn't make any sense to me. And then he said, and two, is he actually a better third pair right defensive option than Mayfield or Pulock?
Yes, he is.
And then he said he's guessing the organization would rather go with their own young guys, just a hunch. I'm still impressed with Pulock's game. I think he can be better defensively, but I'm still not ready to throw the book out on Ryan Pulock. And I like the Mayfield
deal. I'm not saying
throw
the book out, but they're still developing. And again, it's the same old BS of counting on youngsters to develop faster than any other damn youngsters ever developed before. What they pin their hopes on again.
And the problem is we have four young defensemen in the lineup developing at the same time.
Right.
Pellick, Pulock, Mayfield, and now Aho.
Right. It's a tough proposition, man. It's tough to win that way.
The biggest issue for me is when you do take one of them out to replace them with a veteran presence, you're replacing them with Dennis Seidenberg and Thomas Hickey.
Who's lost about 86 steps. Since last year.
And Thomas Hickey, who I think is an extremely smart player. I think he's a smart player. I think he's a great skater. He gets tossed like a rag doll.
Yeah, physically he's taking a beating.
He's not strong enough.
It's tough, man. It's tough. You know, there are some positives to speak of, obviously. You know, Tavares' offensive play and
Barzal, Bailey.
Obviously Josh Bailey, Anders Lee with 25 goals. There's a lot of good things happening, just no good things happening on the defensive side of the puck
And they're all overshadowed because the offense has stopped overcoming the defensive issues and winning games.
Which
on
we
their
said
own.
Was going to happen. We said the offense was going to regress, and when it regressed, they need the defense to compensate, and the defense has clearly not been able to compensate, and that's the reason why they find themselves where they are on the outskirts of the playoff picture, and for a second consecutive season, they're going to be in a dogfight to climb back.
I mean, and it seems like every game they're trying to claw back from defensive mistakes. The Devils game, they take the 1-0 lead. The next thing you know, they're losing 4-2.
They're playing from behind so often that it's exhausting to continually exert that much energy to try and come back.
You can't continue that trend going forward.
Right.
Something has to give. Something has to change. And right now, there's no personnel trades that are going to be made. So someone has to start holding somebody accountable on the ice, on the bench, at practice, because something has to change defensively. Is it a system problem? Figure it out. Is it a player problem? Figure it out. But there has to be some accountability for the, I don't even want to say poor defensive play, because I think it's just a lack of defensive play.
Yeah, it's not even right.
There's
it's
just nothing
even,
there.
That's a great point. That's a great point. It's not even that the defensive play has been bad. It's been non-existent.
I can't look at it and say, okay, well, they could do this better. They just need to play defense.
It's pond hockey. They're playing pond hockey.
I feel like I'm watching a basketball game where it's just back and forth, goal, goal, goal. There's just no, it's like the NBA
All-Star
game. How about
this? Let's try this Saturday at MSG. Let's just come out for warm-ups. The Islanders on one end, Rangers on the other. Everyone just throws their goddamn sticks in the middle. And you just throw the sticks to each side and you just play, right? That seems to be the kind of game they're playing. It's just, you know, like a game of pond hockey.
The only defenseman that I thought was going to be a staple for the Islanders was going to be Leddy, and he hasn't even been good defensively.
He was good, then he was not good, then he was good, and then he's been up and down. He's been very inconsistent this year.
The problem is, if you look at the Islanders' defense right now, the way they're made up, their best defenseman is a fully focused offensive defenseman in Leddy.
right.
Their best prospect is an offensive defenseman in Pulick.
I don't know if he's their best prospect right now anymore. I think it's probably shifts a little bit to Aho and or Taze.
Well, if that's the case, Aho is an offensive defenseman.
And so is Taze.
There's no hard-nosed shutdown defenseman coming up through the system. You know where he is right now? He's in Calgary. Well, I do think Hamonic was very overrated by the Islander fans and some of the Islander media. I do think Travis Hamonic was an overrated defenseman. He was defenseman.
Right. I think we all fell in love with who Hamonic was as a person.
Crap out of Crosby and Malkin throughout that entire Pittsburgh playoff series. He showed he could do it.
So again, you take Martin out of the lineup 2 years ago. You take Franz's defensive presence out of the lineup.
Right. And now all of a sudden
you take Hamonic's hard-nosed play out of the lineup. Again, like you just said perfectly, whether he was overrated or not, or a top four, top five, whatever he was, he was hard-nosed and he played the game with a lot of toughness and emotion. And you take that out, and that's a lot of identity gone.
We still haven't replaced Franz Nielsen.
Nope.
We've replaced Kyle Okposo.
Absolutely.
I think Kyle Okposo's been replaced.
More so.
We haven't replaced Nielsen's presence yet.
We haven't replaced Martin's presence.
And we haven't replaced Hamonic.
For what he brought, and we haven't replaced what Hamonic brought. No.
That's 3 out of 4 that have still yet to be replaced. Now, I think, at least, they were hoping to groom Anthony Beauvillier into the Franz Nielsen-style defensive center.
They were.
Not going according to plan. Or at least not on schedule. I think they were hoping Mayfield, Pelech, one of them would have risen to the Travis Hamonic occasion. Not on schedule.
Yep.
And as for Martin, I think they were hoping Chimera could bring that. But I mean, I could be Chimera's kid.
Right.
That's a problem.
And like I said, it's just one thing after another, right? I mean, you get the Belmont news, which is great news for the organization and the fans going forward, and then you kind of get slapped in the face with the play on the ice, and then all of a sudden, boom, you have all these injuries. You have Boychuk, you have DeHaan, you have the other night against Pittsburgh, they freaking lost 3 guys for crying out loud. Bailey gets hurt, Ladd gets hurt, Pulick gets hurt.
Do we have any more news on Bailey?
Bailey is a left knee tweak. It is not a serious injury. He should be back shortly after they come back. I'm not sure if he'll be ready for Saturday against the Rangers, but it's not a long-term thing. It's a left knee tweak. Luckily, it's nothing more serious than that. Ladd's having a little bit of tightness in his back again, which is not good news. And Pulick, obviously, as everyone saw, suffered the facial injury, but he was able to play Sunday, so that's good news. Boychuk should be back after the break as well. So,
I'm going to go back really quick to what I said in the beginning, because this is the most negative we've ever been between the Dump and Chase podcast and the Secondary Assist podcast. I think this is the most negative we've ever had.
Let me just finish 1 second. Yeah, what I was going to say, because I'll forget, because I'm so old.
Jason Chimera of this podcast.
It'll start oozing out of my ear. So my point was that, and then you get the news, and then you get hit in the head with the news of the Devin Toews. Staple hits you over the head with another brick today with the Linus Soderstrom news that he had surgery on his abdomen. He'll be back this year, which is good news, but still another surgery. And then you have news that, you know what? Oh, I'm sorry. The Islanders won Belmont, but they can't even put a shovel in the ground until the environmental review is done, which will take 12 to 14 months. So now you're looking at next summer before they can even put a shovel in the ground. Now you have to go back to Barclays and grovel, basically, to let the team play assumed at a 13,000 seat tinfoil, not even AHL quality rink. And then after that, after you grovel to them, you have to then go to the NHL and say, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Bettman, we don't need the Coliseum for a year now. We might need it for 2 or 3 years. It's just one thing after another. I mean, when does it end? When does it end?
All right. So to bring us back from the ledge, with all of this negativity, with how bad they're playing, with a 3-6-1 record in their last 10 games...
Well, 6 wins in their last 19. Let's say it that way. Makes it sound even worse, but that is what it is.
They are 1 point out of the wild card.
I know.
And five points out of the division.
I don't know how that's possible, but...
Because the Met is so close this year. It is so good. The Islanders are...
They're 6-12-1 in their last 19. So they've got 6 wins in their last 19 games. For them to still be that close is... amazing.
We're halfway through the season. The Islanders are a game over halfway through the season. The Islanders have been abysmal, and they are only 9 points out of the division lead.
Although you kind of have to start flipping your viewpoint now, right? As it gets later, you kind of have to stop looking at how many points behind they are and look concurrently at how many teams they have to jump.
Right.
Right.
They have to jump. So right now, the Islanders, Carolina, and Philadelphia all have 46 points. The Islanders are listed at the bottom because they've played the most
games. They played more games, right?
But, so they have
to jump. They're in last in the Metro via points percentage.
Right. So they have to jump Philadelphia, Carolina, and Pittsburgh to make the wild card right now.
Right. Right.
Then the Rangers are at 49 points as the top wild card team. Columbus at 51, Devils at 52. Washington, who's gone on a 7-1-2 run in their last 10, are at the top of the Met at 55 points. The Met is an absolute clutterbuck right now with points.
It's a clusterbuck.
It's a clusterbuck. Now we're getting into division play. The Islanders haven't played many games against New Jersey, Rangers. So if they could right the ship, they will be beating the teams they need to jump.
They'll be 4-point games.
Right. This is going to be make or break over the next month or so.
Valid point.
And manage to right the ship defensively enough that their offense can lead the way. Because who do they have? We have the Rangers coming up, and then we have... All right, so there's only two games against the division for the rest of January. There's the Rangers, and then Montreal, and then the Devils. So the Rangers and the Devils, that sucks. Divisional opponent, back half of a back-to-back. But why not? It's the Islanders. The league doesn't care about them. But this is a very tough January.
Yep.
They need to right the ship soon. They have the Rangers, Montreal, the Devils... Boston, Chicago, Arizona, who, while Arizona should be a freebie, this is the freaking Islanders we're talking about. They never
Nothing's
beat the team they should.
Nope.
Vegas, Florida, Toronto as a backup.
Vegas.
And then February rolls around, and we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 division opponents, including 2 against Columbus. But over the next 2 months, we have 2 against the Rangers, 2 against Columbus, and 2 more against the Devils. Those are 6 division games against teams right there ahead of us in the division that could make a big impact on the season if the Islanders can right the ship defensively. Now, can they do that? I do not know.
Again, I think what it comes down to is, you know, you have to. The great thing about this bye is that it comes with the premise that you can't even practice, right? So they're completely off and away from the rink for 4 days. They don't convene until Friday, where they'll start preparing for Saturday's afternoon matinee against the Rangers. So it's literally 4 days away from the rink, away from practice. Get hockey off your mind, totally wipe it, and hopefully they find a reset button and come back Friday with, Jesus, something, anything. Cut your goals against by two. I know you're still at three, but, you know, baby steps. And then
the baby steps have to start with playing defensive hockey.
Right. Right. You got to cut those goals against, or else, you know what? Once again, they'll be finished in April and they'll be watching everybody else play into May and June.
And if that happens, if this collapse continues, my idea of Tavares, I think, shifts more towards 40-60 than 60-40.
Probably. I think that the fact that he didn't re-sign right after Belmont is an indication that while Belmont was an issue for him, he was right all along when he kept saying it's not the only issue. I think that shines its light even brighter now. So we'll see. But yeah, it's definitely wouldn't make signing him any easier, that's for sure.
All right. Well, now that I'm going to go cry myself to bed.
Yeah, because I'm right now, it's like I'm mentally exhausted right now talking about all this. Too much negativity. And I'm not usually that negative of a person, so I apologize to the listeners. But we also felt, Shane and I talked pre-show, and we also felt that it's what you guys deserve. You know, you guys, if we start sitting here and sugarcoating what's going on, you're going to see right through us and
tune us out anyway. I don't know how you can sugarcoat this. This is
that's true, too, but again, it just doesn't deserve anything but honesty, and I don't think we were unfair. I thought we just laid it out there as to what we've all seen.
And this is Monday, January 8th. There's 4 days off after today. So five, and this is the mandatory 5-day break the NHL instituted, 2 years ago?
Yep.
There's 4 days left for the Islanders.
This year they're clustering teams together more, where a lot of teams have their bye the same time.
Yeah, that's why there's only one game tonight.
Right, and you'll see that. It'll be a light schedule this week and next week.
Now, when can they play? They could practice Friday, right? They have to be off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
they
Thursday.
They have to be off four consecutive days.
Practice no Friday.
No game for five consecutive days.
Okay. So they'll practice on Friday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they have time to sit down.
That's it.
And just recoup.
I wouldn't even think about hockey if I was them. No. Be with their families, be with their kids.
I would be doing, Barzell's been at the Nets games. I would be doing literally anything but thinking about hockey until Friday. And then on Friday, you come back to the rink, you're refreshed, you're not dwelling on how you've been playing. And then
you're coming off a win.
So. And you're coming off a good win in which your call-up rookie defenseman scored a goal and assisted on the tying goal to send you to overtime. And then you pulled off a shootout win where Halak finally helped the team, a goalie finally helped the team win. I feel like the last time that happened was the Greiss 75-save San Jose game.
Although Halak's been good. Halak's been good the last week or so. He's been good.
I feel like he stole the shootout.
I think he did, too.
Because no one was good in that shootout.
No, it was the worst shootout. Me and my son were like, this is the worst shootout we've ever seen.
I hate it to begin with, and that one was just miserable to watch.
It's so terrible.
But then when they head into the Garden on Saturday, 1 p.m., play the Rangers, hopefully give us... I'm not even going to look at the result. Like, the result is the least of my worries right now. I need to see better play. Because if they win 6-5, but are still sieves defensively, I'm not going to be happy.
No, you shouldn't be.
I need to see improved defensive play going forward. End rant, end podcast. I'm Shane Blackburn. He's Andy Graziano. Until next week, this is the Secondary Assist Podcast. Goodbye.
Good night, all.